Welcome to a new edition of Game Misconduct. I'm CT here with Dory.
Hello.
Don't forget to follow us on social media. Got a frog in my throat there. At Game Miz with a Z Conduct. We got a great show today. We're super excited to talk with Dan Duva. You may recognize that name. He was originally the voice of the Syracuse Crunch and now has moved on to be the voice of the Vegas Golden Knights, who the Lightning meet this week in Tampa. So we're super excited to get to talk to him. He's got some history with the Lightning. Plus, you know, being with Vegas, talking about everything that's gone on since they started as a team last year, we're super excited to talk to him. We'll talk to him in the second and probably a little bit of the third segment. So there's that frog again. I don't know about you, Dory, where you work, but everybody in my office is sick and they're coming to work. And somebody had walking pneumonia last week and still came to work.
Yeah, that's not a thing. In my job, there's a big, huge thing. Like, we don't want your germs. I'm not joking. It's like, if you're sick, go home.
Well, and that's what we say here, where I work, we're 24 hours a day, 7 days a week thing. So it's hard for people to take time off, which I understand. But it's like, okay, come in with the surgical mask.
Mm-hmm.
And like have a holster of Lysol and
Clorox.
Purell and just, you know, wipe down everything that you touch.
Seriously.
I'm like super paranoid. I'm like popping vitamins. I'm taking emergency. I'm drinking tea. I didn't leave my house on Saturday.
Emergency is so underrated. To be honest with you, I drink it too much.
And they're not a sponsor.
They're not.
Of our show.
No. And I'm slightly addicted to it.
Really?
Yeah.
So do you drink it with water?
Yep.
See, I can't do that.
Yep.
I have to add it to orange juice,
nope.
Which is a lot of emergency.
Get the raspberry flavor. It's amazing.
When I'm not feeling 100%,
mm-hmm.
I always gravitate towards like orange juice and ginger ale. Like that's my thing. And then white cheddar Cheez-Its are my thing.
Okay.
And oh gosh. Okay. This is so going off topic, but maybe you guys can relate. It's orange juice with lots of pulp, Canada Dry ginger ale.
That's a thing.
White cheddar Cheez-Its and wonton soup. That's all I want.
Ooh, okay. But wonton soup are very much like chicken noodle.
Right.
So that makes sense.
So the other night I was leaving work and I was leaving work a little later and I live in downtown and there's one Chinese restaurant and I'm not paying the $3.95 delivery fee on Uber Eats because that's how much a pint of wonton soup costs.
Right.
And then it's like a $2 delivery fee if you order from there or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm driving home and I'm like, you know what? I'm just going to find street parking. They shouldn't charge you for meters at 7:30 at night. I'm just going to go in, ask for some wonton soup. I'll get it. I'll drive home. No big deal. I pull up on the street parking. They meter till 8 p.m. And I'm like, well, I'm not paying
a dollar
to park for 5 minutes. So I'm like, you know what? Just go home. You've got some like a dried soup mix, chicken noodle soup mix at your house. Just make that. So I go home and I have a hoodie on because it's a little cold this day. And so I wear my hoodie, which is oversized and it makes me happy. And I'm just stirring the soup, right? And I have a gas range. And apparently my sleeve was a little too big.
Uh-oh.
Because it caught on fire.
Oh my gosh.
I was on fire on Wednesday.
Oh my gosh.
So
what did
I'm
you
like,
do though?
I'm like, ah! And so I'm like, I put my arm on the counter and I just start hitting my arm and I'm like, you idiot, take your arm out of the sweatshirt and like put the fire out.
And you're like, Alexa, help!
What do I do if I'm on fire? Oh my goodness. I was like, where is the hidden camera? This
right.
is because I was too cheap to pay for the delivery fee. So I'm just like, I'll make it my own.
And now you cost yourself
a hoodie.
$65 hoodie.
Yes. And it was my favorite hoodie. And it was a one of a kind hoodie.
Aww.
You can't go buy it. It was like from a radio record event.
Aww.
And because I decluttered my life, it was the only hoodie I had because I don't need five hoodies.
See, this is a lesson for all of you not to watch the Marie Kondo show, which I have been telling CT for weeks now.
Oh, my goodness.
Came back to bite you.
It did. And set me on fire.
Well, I'm glad you...
I should have just... Next time, I'm just going to buy the wonton soup and pay the dollar to park.
Just next time, you'll be like, do I really want to pay the dollar? Yes, I do.
Yes, I do. Oh, because I won't set myself on fire.
Well, thankfully, you're here and okay.
Yes, you know, we can laugh about it now, but, you know, I think I'm just going to start doing Uber Eats all the time. I shouldn't be cooking.
Aww.
And you can't cook naked because that will hurt even more. So, whatever.
Aww.
Yeah, so that... Complete 180 on what we were talking about, but
that's fine.
One of the reasons why I didn't watch the hockey game on Wednesday night because I was busy putting myself out.
Yeah.
And you I was on fire more than our team was.
And I was going to say, hey, if you're going to, you know, have some eventful life situation like that happen, as well make it a game with her down.
Yeah. So I was busy, you know, putting myself out of being on fire. And I turned the TV on and they were already down 3-0.
Yeah,
so I was like, okay,
nope.
I'm not even gonna. It's been a rough night already. Let's move on. So, Dory, let's get a quick synopsis of that. You know, what
that
you thought.
Pittsburgh game. Ugh. I will say this. Two and a half periods were not the best effort.
Right.
They were off for a long time. We had, you know, a fifth of the team in San Jose or whatever. And then, you know, 2/3 of the team in the Turks and Caicos. And who knows what anybody else was
Beach
doing.
And
yeah. I mean, I get it. It's the first game back on the road, a road trip in Pittsburgh.
And I think Pittsburgh had a turd of a game right before the break.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
They were coming ready to play.
Exactly. And now we're at the point where
everyone's coming to play, man.
Not named Tampa Bay, is now fighting for spots. So you're going to see it step up a lot, which we did see in the next game, which we'll get to. But I think it's hard to get back, and they know that. They know it's difficult.
Yeah.
And that's all it was. I was slightly panicked, as I'm sure most Lightning were. I think half of them were like, well, this is expected. And then I think some people were like, whoa, I'm a little scared here.
Yeah.
But they did come back. They did fight back through, you know.
Right.
And that's something that, you know, we always say good teams
find a way to win.
I get it. They didn't win, but they didn't just give up. And Steve Stamkos, you know, has played remarkable this season. He's now beat his goal total from last year by one. Last year he had 27 goals. Now he's at 28.
And last year was a pretty good year for him.
And last year was a good year for him. Kucherov is still it's insane. I want to know. I cannot wait to see how many points he has by the end. It's just a personal thing at this point. I'm like, how many points are going to get? How many points is he going to get? So it was rough. But they knew it was rough. They all said, like, look, it's not an excuse. It just wasn't good.
Yeah.
But we did keep fighting through it. And that's kind of, I thought, okay, at least there's something to take from it.
Right.
And they did.
Right. And two nights later, at the island.
Wow.
Barclays Center, where they have the turntable underground to get this. There's a really interesting article Brian Burns wrote on TampaBayLightning.com about him, like, kind of the team behind the team. Talking about, you know, delivering equipment to the Barclays Center.
Yeah,
so take a look at that. It's really interesting.
And he's told that story with us before, twice, I think. So it's a really fun story. Go ahead and read that. But I will tell you, it was a different Lightning team.
Mm.
You could tell,
And the Islanders are a good team this year.
They are a very...
Barry Trotz.
Very good team this year.
Really. Losing John Tavares. I think people are kind of surprised. But
fair.
Really good team this year.
Yep, sure are. they're really kicking into gear. December was the month that they decided who they were.
Right.
And they've been pretty darn good.
Yeah.
They're now, at the time, you know, I think they're right behind the Lightning now, maybe in the standings.
Yeah.
Jumped Toronto.
Wow.
They're a good team and they wanted that win and they did get it.
Yeah. Overtime shootout.
Man, that game.
Victor Hedman. Overtime shootout goal was
like
so good.
20-minute game.
Really?
I just felt it was fun. It was exciting. I know it's either, you know, low scoring games, but this game just didn't feel like that to me. It felt like this is the playoffs. This just was, it was a lot of energy. And I felt like it went really fast and it worked out our favor. Hedman with that really amazing.
It's beautiful.
So, you know, I love that. I really like that game. And the Islanders are weird because I remember last year my least favorite Lightning game of all was the Islanders game where they got completely blown out.
Yeah.
So far, I don't know. I just found it like just so much fun to watch.
And then the next night, back-to-back on national television versus the New York Rangers, who a lot of people like to joke and say we are the Rangers of the South because we have so many ex-players on our team.
But we'll take it.
Yep. They're doing well for us, so I'll take it.
Yep.
Little bit of a different game.
It was. And the Rangers aren't as good.
No, they're not the Islanders level.
They're not this year. So I thought it was, it went a little different. I want to point out that Louis Domingue
So good.
And he's so honest because they asked him after the game about how do you stay fresh and ready? You haven't had a lot of starts since December. And he was like, I'll be honest, you can't.
Yeah.
You just
don't. It's hard.
You just hope for the best. You put on your gear and you practice as good. And you just, when they call your number, you go. And I think it's, you know, I really would love to pick Coach Fran John's brain.
Yeah.
Of how he gets him in that mindset, because we saw it in the past on this team. Other people see it. Your backup goalie's not supposed to
keep you in games.
Not the way that Dominguez.
Yeah.
And it's to not play in a month almost or yeah. something crazy like that. Yeah. He was just really, he's so good. And the guys really rallied around him, I
yep.
think.
Yep.
And
I think they wanted to close the road trip off
yeah.
strong.
It was. It was a good road trip and all.
It was. You know, you kind of were fearing the worst after that yeah. game on Wednesday versus the Penguins. But they really came back in the island. And then the Rangers game, I thought they were really good with Domingue and Net.
Yeah.
And I thought it was a really nice statement game. I know yeah. we say that all the time, but it was a nationally televised game on NBC, not on
right.
NBCSN,
right.
on NBC. So I thought we had a great showing.
Mm-hmm.
I was so happy that Chernak got that his
finally.
First NHL goal.
Finally.
He played like something 30 NHL games. It was
finally.
His first goal. His celebration was epic. The bench just erupted. That you could tell they were so happy for this kid.
Yeah.
So I was super excited to see that. He is yeah. quickly becoming one of my favorite players on this team.
And now with him scoring, Danik Martel is now the only Tampa Bay skater who has not scored this season.
Wow. All right, so we need to throw Danik in the lineup for
yeah.
our game and just see what happens.
But hey, you know what? But how many guys get to say they got to play their first NHL game, find out, when they were wandering the street?
Right. On, not even at the arena yet. But hey, we're dropping the puck in 15 minutes. You think he can get
here?
Yeah.
So he's got his own little nifty story.
And he got his point. I think he got a point
he
in that game.
He did get a point.
He got an assist.
Yeah. But he didn't. Yeah,
get a goal.
Correct. How about that?
Yeah. So.
Fun facts.
So all in all, a decent week for the team.
I think so.
They're heading back home. Gonna have a nice little short homestand where they play Vegas.
That's exciting.
And you know, we only see them once a year here.
Yeah. And you got to see them, so you get to see them twice now.
Yeah,
I saw him in
Vegas in October, and so that'll be Tuesday night, which will be a good one. And then St. Louis is in town on Thursday.
And they've. I like this homestand because
And then Pittsburgh's in town Saturday.
Right, yeah.
So we kind of get a redemption game.
We get a redemption game, which we've already beat them once.
Right.
So.
But that's another back-to-back. They play Pittsburgh on Saturday, and then they're in Florida on Sunday. Now, granted, it's not like a long road trip.
But it's still back-to-back.
And then they come back home for three more games. It's like...
Yeah. The interesting thing was always in the past, I don't want to say always in the past, but usually the second game of a back-to-back has not fared well for the Lightning. But this year it has.
Well, you
they've
know,
done
they,
well.
When you have a start like you do in Pittsburgh, guess what? You don't have any opportunity for an excuse. You know, feel like they were kind of like practicing on that game,
yeah,
like in the first two
like
periods,
in the first two and a half, whatever.
So they had some periods left in them.
Yeah.
But you know, I kind of feel guilty. I was thinking about this at the All-Star game, and you know, we're criticizing. Alexander Ovechkin for not going to the All-Star game. And, you know, we're thinking about the guys who need rest and all this. And I'm like, you know what? You criticize, but you don't get out there and play. However, I'm not making millions of dollars playing hockey either. So it's just, I'm kind of trying to be a little bit less critical,
mm-hmm.
especially since we've kind of had to nitpick this season because they've been so good. So I'm trying to give him a little more slack,
yeah.
but not too much.
Yeah.
Because now it's when it really matters.
And I thought the two New York games were really promising. I felt like, yeah, we still got it.
Right.
Those 10 game or the 10 days off, the Pittsburgh game, it's okay.
Right.
And I thought they answered in the bat. And I thought, this is going to go one of two ways.
Right.
And it went the other way.
They're going to either go off the cliff or climb back up and
yeah.
keep going. There were some... habits that happened at the end of the run before the All-Star break that made me a little nervous,
mm-hmm.
but I feel a little better about those
yeah.
now.
Yeah. The Vegas game and the Blues game are going to be telling because the Lightning have struggled against the Western Conference. I mean, listen.
Struggled
is
air quotes,
very loose term. But the majority of their wins have come against, or losses, I should say, have come against Western Conference teams. So it'll be nice to have them back in our building.
Yep.
And, you know, have the teams come in here. But it's getting to the point where they're way ahead.
Way ahead.
They're way ahead
and that's,
of their division.
That's nice to have a little buffer. But teams are coming
nice.
At them. Teams are coming
But
for
you know
them.
What? I wonder when it gets to a point where you just go, listen, guys, mathematically, we're not catching them. Because we're getting, I think it's like 18 points or something. I don't know. It's
just
a ridiculous
keep,
amount of
just
points.
Just keep consistency. I would just want consistency. That's all I want.
Yeah, from them, but I mean the teams coming in.
Right.
I wonder when they're just like, you know, well, we're just going to play as hard
we're
as we can.
We're just going to try to get second
yes.
in the division.
Yeah. No, you know what I'm saying? Like,
right.
we're just listening.
But
it's
I
not
don't want
happen.
Any of that creeping into
nah,
our team's
I
heads.
So.
I just want consistency.
Yeah, for I agree.
You know what I mean?
I agree.
All right. We're going to take a break, and we're going to come back with our guest, Dan Duva, on Game Misconduct. Stick around.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Welcome back to Game Misconduct. I'm CT here with Dory. Don't forget to follow us on all social media at Game Miz with a Z Conduct. And we're super excited to be speaking with our guest. We've done a lot of research on him in the last couple of days. And so, like, we've kind of amped ourselves up for this interview. We're speaking with Dan Duva with the Vegas Golden Knights. Thank you so much for joining us today, Dan.
CP and Dory, what a pleasure to be with you. I'm now nervous that you have dug deep into the background. I don't know what's going to come up now.
No, nothing bad.
I'm looking forward to it.
Nothing bad.
This is not like Savannah Guthrie here. Like, we're just having a good time. We're just having a conversation.
Great.
But we, can you let everybody know where they can hear you and find you? Are you on social media? What's your deal?
Sure. Well, first off, the broadcast itself, we call it the Vegas Golden Knights Radio Network. The flagship is Fox Sports Radio in Las Vegas. That's 98.9 FM and 1340 AM. And there are a couple of dozen radio stations around Nevada, Utah, Arizona, California that carry the broadcast over the air. And then, of course, online, the NHL app is a great way to pick up the broadcast on your mobile device. And, you know, I know John Cooper listens occasionally on Sirius XM Radio because he'll text me during the game. Yeah, that's another story. That's how you can listen anywhere in the world these days. But on social media, I'm on Twitter at Dan_Duva, DAN_DUVA.
All right, we're not going to let you get off that easy where you're like, oh, that's another story. You do have history.
You have tons of stories, by the way. I mean, you've led a very fascinating broadcasting career so far. And I'm not going
to... I think so, too.
Thanks. I'm not going to give out your age, but I'll say you're a fairly young man.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Sometimes I look in the mirror and see how much hair I have and then wonder if that's actually the case. But that's life on the road, I suppose.
Well, you're making us feel like a bunch of slackers, is what we're saying.
Well, you know, it's one of those things as a kid, you like to play sports. Eventually, you realize that it's probably not going to lead to a career playing sports, but maybe talking about sports could keep you around the game. Whether it's hockey or baseball or football or basketball, you name it. So it you work at it, and here we are.
All right, so let's talk about. I know Dory has done some research on you, and you have some history with Doc Emmerich, I believe.
Who's
one of my favorite people. Oh, you're from. Oh, we're gonna have to talk off mic. You're from Jersey, so am I. So we'll have to talk about the vicinities that we're from. But Doc Emmerich, one of my favorite. Ever in history of any sport. Would you give us some background on that?
Oh, yeah. Well, first off, growing up in Jersey, I grew up in a town called Nutley, New Jersey, and the family moved up to Ridgewood. I was in eighth grade, I think, when we ended up in Ridgewood. The towns are maybe 15 minutes apart from each other. But Nutley is right down the road from East Rutherford, where the Devils played for many years. What was originally Brendan Byrne Arena, then Continental Airlines Arena. And so I grew up Devils fan. And Devils lost to the Rangers Eastern Conference Final. I think I was 8 years old. And then the next year, the Devils won it. And, of course, Mike Emmerich is doing the play-by-play at that time for Fox for the playoffs, but, of course, was doing all the regular season games for the Devils. And when he says the championship to New Jersey, the Devils win the Stanley Cup against the Red Wings in 95, the lockout short year, you know, what could happen to a kid better than your favorite team winning the Stanley Cup? And I didn't even have to go on the highway to get to the arena. So it was Devils fever all over that part of New Jersey as a kid. So that sucked me in. And then later on, I started doing this broadcasting thing, going into my freshman year of high school. A buddy of mine, his name's Guy Benson, he's gone into the news and politics world of broadcasting. But he and I both wanted to broadcast our high school's games, football, hockey, lacrosse. I played baseball, so I didn't get to broadcast much baseball. But we would go to Devils games with a micro cassette tape recorder to practice. So we would know what we were doing. We'd have a feel for it by the time the high school hockey season started a couple of months later. You know, NHL starts October, high school hockey started in December. So we would go and sit in the upper deck of the Meadowlands with a tape recorder, practice the broadcast, then we'd go bother Mike Emmerich and Chico Resch after the game.
Wow.
At that time, I couldn't call it a relationship. We were just obnoxious kids. But he was very kind. And also Mike Miller and Randy Belichick, who were doing the Devils radio at the time. But Doc, of course, was great. And then over the years, we got to know each other a little bit more, and I would send him tapes. And then you fast forward a bunch of years, and, when I was trying to find my first job out of school, the New Jersey Devils had an opening in the ECHL, Director of Public Relations and Broadcasting in Trenton, New Jersey, and I happen to know that Doc put in a good word with Mr. Lamoriello, and the rest is history. So Doc and I were colleagues to an extent, and I would send some Trenton Devils notes up to him and the producer for New Jersey's TV broadcast, and I'd go up to Newark sometimes. So I got to, sit next to Doc sometimes, during Devils games and kind of see how we went through stuff. And he's been very supportive, a mentor, of course, but also a friend. And we get to see each other occasionally now when the Knights are on the games that are on his schedule.
Well, that's so cool. I'm just like, I'm geeking out for you. Like, this is just so cool.
Yeah.
You worked with the Devil or the Trenton team, and then you've also worked with the Syracuse Crunch, and you called the games for our affiliate team for a few years.
Oh, yeah.
So you're very familiar with the Lightning. Can you kind of give us some insight into what it was like working with the Crunch? Because we don't, it's quite a long trip from Tampa to go see the Crunch play. It's on my bucket list. I do want to do it, but kind of give us an idea, because Cooper was with the team, correct? So that's the story. Mm-hmm. So maybe, give us a little insight into that.
Yeah. And it's so interesting because despite having been around pro hockey for, a decade now, I guess, I had never seen a Tampa Bay Lightning game in person in Tampa until the Golden Knights played here last year, because the Syracuse Crunch are playing games.
Right.
Opportunity to go to Tampa. So that was a strange thing last year, because a lot of the people that I have come to know, some people, like, I had never actually met in person.
Wow.
Until I came down here last year, though I had spoken with so many, corresponded by email and so on and so on. But in terms of the Crunch, you think about Syracuse as a sports city. The very first Calder Cup was won by the Syracuse Stars in 1937.
Wow.
The American Hockey League Championship. And they've had a number of different franchises in different leagues over the years. But minor league hockey is very much a part of the culture there. Even the Slapshot was filmed in the arena, the War Memorial, the scene where the Hanson brothers climb over the glass into the crowd.
Yep.
And the announcers, the peanut vendors are standing up to the that was the War Memorial Arena. And the cops come and bang on the door to arrest the Hanson brothers in the locker room. That is, to this day, the Syracuse Crunch locker room.
That's so cool.
So it's a special place. The fans love their hockey, and a lot of people will identify Syracuse with the university and the football team and the basketball team on campus. And I went to school there, and I loved being back and around the university. Got to teach a little bit while I was there too. But the Crunch, you know, when it started, was an affiliate of the Vancouver Canucks. Mm-hmm. And the general manager at the time for the Crunch, assistant GM for Vancouver, was George McPhee, who wasn't too far removed from his playing days. And now, of course, is the general manager of the Golden Knights. Mm-hmm. He has maintained a relationship with the owner of the Crunch, Howard Dolgan. He was the owner then and is the owner now. And Howard Dolgan, and I say this with great affection, he's kind of like George Steinbrenner meets Barnum and Bailey. He's involved in everything. He's so creative. He drives the staff. And it's not a big staff, but he gets the most out of the people who work for him. And so many people, including myself, owe their career progression to what we had in Syracuse thanks to Howard Dolgan. I'm one broadcaster who's come out of Syracuse with the Crunch, but Bob McElligott with the Blue Jackets, he was there for 10 years with the Crunch and others, and in other positions, too, with ticket sales and so on. But under Howard Dolgan, the owner, there are two guys who've been really steering the ship for a long time. Vance Lederman, who's one of Howard's friends growing up together in Brooklyn. And then there's also Jim Cerosi, who's the chief operating officer. And if there is a player from the Lightning organization, whether it's a guy who gets sent down or a prospect coming up, if you find yourself going to Syracuse to play for the Crunch, Jim is probably the guy who's arranging you to be picked up and getting you to the airport and taking care of you. I mean, he does everything. He started with the organization as an intern in the mid-90s.
Wow.
He's involved in everything. You know, the game that was played in the Carrier Dome, 30,715 people to watch the Crunch and the Utica Comets a few years ago. Like, there's so many logistics involved in making that happen. And Jim Cerosi is the guy on the ground who makes it happen. Howard Dolgan might be the visionary. We joke Vance Lederman is the man with the money. But but it's Jim Cerosi who really puts everything together. And again, the staff is relatively small. I think right now it's maybe a dozen people. It's not a big staff. And their broadcaster now, Lucas Favalli, was an intern with me when he was a junior and senior from 2012 to 2014, I believe. And he does a terrific job. But along with calling the games, he's doing, you know, social media stuff, video stuff, ticket sales, you name it. That's just the nature of minor league sports. But the Crunch was just a fantastic organization to work for. Challenge, you know, they demand a lot of you because that's what the fans expect. And that's the relationship that the Crunch had with the Lightning. And that's why the Crunch have extended that partnership mutually with the Lightning to continue what has been a wonderful partnership now 7 years and counting.
We're speaking with Dan Duva with the Vegas Golden Knights. All right, Dan, so we can't let an opportunity pass to get some John Cooper stories.
Yeah, you know, it seems, you know, for me, I only had John for less than a full season at Syracuse because he was called up to Tampa Bay during that lockout shortened season 2013.
Right.
But in the period of time that I was with John, he was a wonderful interview.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd go into his office, whether at home or on the road, and he'd usually have some critique of my tie, or he said, Dan, you can't show up at a pro hockey game with a spot on your tie. There was not a spot on my tie. He just wanted to give me a jab at the end of the interview. But the one that stands out in the interview antics, we're sitting in John's office, the coach's office at the War Memorial in Syracuse, and there's a game on. I forget who was playing, but John's got his plate, pregame meal, and I'm sitting next to him with a microphone ready, and we're just chatting and watching the game, and I'm thinking when he's done eating, we'll do the interview. And he says, all right, Danny, let's go. I'm like, Coop, you're like, you're still eating. I'm like, no hurry. He's like, no, let's do it. I want to do it. Well, okay. Well, you know, I've got to start recording now. You got to stop eating? And he's like, no, let's go. Let's do it. All right. Hit the record button. We're back at the War Memorial. John Cooper joins us, and he's chewing. So I'm waiting for him to gulp down a bite of food before I finish asking my question and put the microphone in his face. So what do you think? And then he gulps it down and begins to thoughtfully answer the question that I asked. And while he does, he takes his fork, scoops up some more food, and puts it in my mouth. And then continues to answer the question. And when I have gulped down the food that he shoved into my mouth, he's done answering. And then I have to ask him another question.
Oh,
and
my
interview goodness. Proceeded like that without anybody at home aware of how the interview was actually taking place. You know, and that's, you know, John having fun. Another quick one just that was significant for me, what year was that? 2014, maybe. The Crunch are playing in Washington, D.C. against the Hershey Bears at whatever the arena was called at the time, where the Washington Capitals play.
Okay.
And some of the Lightning folks had stopped over to see the Crunch play, including John Cooper. And so I'd seen him at the hotel the night before, and I said, hey, Cooper, if you'd like to come up during the radio broadcast, we'd love to have you on at some point. You know, maybe one of the intermissions. He says, well, when would you like me, first or second intermission? I said, whatever works better for you. Okay, next day comes along. First intermission arrives, no sign of John Cooper. Second intermission comes along, no sign of John Cooper. We're about to start the third period, and the door to my booth opens up. In strolls John Cooper, spits out his gum, puts on the headset, and does the whole third period broadcast with me, and we didn't take a single commercial break.
Wow!
You know, and he was fantastic. And really, what comes from all of this, and I've got a number of other stories, you know, whether it's John Cooper interacting with me or with players. What stands out about John is how he treats people. And as a coach, knowing that, hey, sometimes Tyler Johnson might need a pat on the back and Andre Palat might need a kick in the rear end, knowing when and how to treat different players. And he, of course, has long since been known as a player's coach, going back to his time in junior hockey and then, of course, the Calder Cup, the great run with the Norfolk Admirals and all that. And you know, Mike Angelides was captain in Norfolk and then at Syracuse. And, you know, the relationship between Cooper and his captain was just amazing, and then how that affected the rest of the club. So I could go on and on about John Cooper. And, you know, I mentioned earlier that he texts me during games. He'll sometimes text me random words like Sasquatch. He's got 2 minutes to say this word.
That's awesome. Just try to work it into your call. I love it.
Yeah. And so when I was, I saw him at the All-Star game in San Jose, and I said, Cooper, you know, it's been a week or so. I haven't gotten any, you know, messages from you to, you know, what's going on? You know,
so that's funny.
That's just how he treats people. He's just so thoughtful, and he has not forgotten, you know, the so-called little people.
Well, you can tell that by his post-game press conferences and his, you know, in the media scrums and everything. He's just that kind of guy, and you could go have a beer with and crack a joke with, and we're lucky to have him here for sure.
Yeah, no doubt about it.
So let's talk about how you got the call to start working with the Vegas Golden Knights. Everybody, it was kind of like the job everybody wanted. Like, everybody wanted to go work for this team that was in the desert and the first, you know, professional sports team in Vegas. What was that like? And did you even have to think about it?
No, in fact, you're thinking, you know, a couple years ahead of time, what might a team in Las Vegas look like? You know, what'd be the name of the team? Who's going to be working for the team? And you figure they're going to need a broadcaster or two. So, you know, even when it was talked about before it officially became a franchise, you start putting out feelers and you know anybody who knows anybody who knows anybody. And a number of little connections were there, but, you know, you weren't sure who was going to really be in charge of hiring a broadcaster and, you know, what radio station was it going to be on and on and on and on. So, frankly, they didn't have a radio partner in place until the April before the start of the season, and I don't think they really began hunting for broadcasters in earnest until after that, sometime in the spring, and they got a TV partner, I think, in June, and then you start to try to reach out to people. So you find out the fellow in charge of communications, Eric Tosi, who had been with the Bruins for a number of years, and you know, as a matter of fact, I had a few people reach out. I mentioned Mike Emmerich, you know, and all these people have been so good to me over the years. But, you know, Doc knew that I was interested in the position, and I'm not sure exactly how he worked his magic, but I know that he did. Mentioned Howard Dolgan, the owner of the Crunch, and his relationship with George McPhee. Mm-hmm. I know that there was definitely some communication there. And I have to tell you, this is way out of left field, but Mr. Jeff Vinnick happens to spend a good chunk of his summer in a town called Chatham, Massachusetts, mm-hmm. where during my college years, I broadcast baseball for the Chatham A's, Cape Cod Baseball League, best college baseball players in the country. And Mr. Vinnick and his wife, Penny, have been very generous to that team over the years. It's a nonprofit baseball team. And I had coffee with Mr. Vinnick last summer, the summer before the Golden Knights started. And I don't know for sure, but I certainly got the feeling that Mr. Vinnick may have put in a good word with Bill Foley, the owner of the Golden Knights. So between those few people, George McPhee and talking to Howard Dolgan, Mike Emmerich talking to the Golden Knights, and Jeff Vinnick, talking with Bill Foley, that stuff helps. But, it usually comes down to the tape. If you've been working at your craft and getting better, and if you've been good to people, I think that reputation precedes you. And I'm very pleased to kind of just look around and realize that enough people thought that highly of me to put me in this position. So it's been an amazing ride.
And before I would talk back to about your talent and your hard work is maybe people down here don't really know this, but you actually call the games solo, except for, what is it, one period with Gary Lawless?
Yeah, Gary pops in from time to time.
I like the way you put that. But, I mean, it's really hard to do that. I think, we're very used to, the great Dave Mishkin with Mr. Mm-hmm. Esposito. And he does a lot of games on his own, too. But, you think about the Ernie Harwells and the Vin Scullys, these guys, these true broadcasters who were just amazing at their craft did his solo. And you were, that good that they're like, well, we're not going to hide him with anybody. We're going to just let him do his thing.
Yeah. It was fun in the minors, especially at Syracuse, because it's not quite as formal. So if there is a scratched player available to come on the broadcast, I would invite that player to come on. And it was often fan favorite Eric Nielsen, the tough guy we had with the Crunch for a few years. And he was great. And also Jared Nightingale, defenseman for the Crunch, he would come on the broadcast sometimes too. That was fun to have the players, because they provide a certain insight, but they're also not trained broadcasters,
right?
So it was fun to kind of work with those guys. But most of the time, and whether it was in the ECHL in Trenton or the American Hockey League in Syracuse, and even with the Golden Knights at different stretches, it's a different kind of thing, because it really boils down to the conversation you're having with the listener, singular. You can't think about the listeners, plural, or an audience of a large group of people. It's an intimate medium. You think about one person sitting at home or sitting in the car or with their earbuds in, whatever it might be. It's one person listening and having a conversation with that person. And you almost think, what is this person wanting to hear? And you rhetorically ask yourself a question and then answer it.
that
is the fun part of it in kind of developing a relationship with the listener. And if you're calling a game solo, you're more aware of that. And when you have a partner, like when Gary Lawless does come on the broadcast with me, I'm aware not only speaking with him, but not excluding the listener from the conversation. I want that listener to feel as though he or she is still sitting right next to me and enjoying the game with me.
So Las Vegas being an expansion team, when the Lightning were an expansion team, they had to educate the listener about the game, because they couldn't just assume that everybody was a Northern transplant that knew about hockey. They had to educate. What has been your philosophy from the inaugural season, and how has that changed now with calling those games?
Good question, because I thought about that, but what it really boiled down to was I grew up watching hockey by going to games, watching on TV, and again, I was fortunate growing up near New York City. I had Mike Emmerich doing the Devils, Sam Rosen doing the Rangers, Howie Rose doing the Islanders, some great TV broadcasters, plus Marv Albert, Kenny Albert on the radio, and on and on and on. So just in terms of hockey broadcasters, I was spoiled. And they never had to teach me the game. I just learned by context, by watching and listening to what they were saying, and I picked it up. There's a certain trust that you place in your listener, in your viewer, to figure it out. I never felt as though broadcasters needed to dumb it down for the listener, to oversimplify it as if we were, in elementary school or something. So I never did that. There are plenty of people in Las Vegas who know hockey because, as you point out, they're transplants, or B, they were fans of the minor league teams in Las Vegas. You had the ECHL team and the Las Vegas Wranglers. You had the old IHL team, the Las Vegas Thunder.
Yep.
The other part of it now, and I think that this is probably the difference between the Golden Knights coming in versus the Tampa Bay Lightning, the way the technology has evolved, you can watch hockey in any number of ways on the internet, learn about the sport if you're curious about something. You know, you can Google what icing is,
right?
If you're not sure, if you're truly brand new to it. But just the exposure to the sport, you know, you can watch games, you know, on your computer or listen on your phone, whatever it might be. And you really couldn't do that in the early 90s when the Lightning came into the league. So I can certainly understand that effort to try to educate the fans. But I think that the fans in Las Vegas have learned just by listening to a regular hockey broadcast of mine on our TV broadcast, or Mike Emmerich on NBC Sports, whatever it might be. I think the fans are learning on their own. And I think that that has given the fans a certain confidence that, hey, we really are a hockey town. We're not just a bunch of people who are amateurs, you know, new to the, you know, they really feel as though they've made themselves a hockey community.
You know, I was I visited Las Vegas in October. I saw the Vancouver play Vegas, and then I was there for the Lightning Vegas game, and I wasn't sure what to expect sitting in the stands. Are the fans going to be nice to me? Is it going to be like when you go to Philly and you're, you know, in enemy territory? How well are they going to know the game? And I was impressed by not how only how nice they were, but how well they knew the game and how married to this team they are. I mean, it kind of helps when they go to the Stanley Cup final, their inaugural season, but, you know, they were just so knowledgeable. And not only that, but just so welcoming to visiting fans.
Yeah, and I see it after the games because we have a post-game radio show that's outside the arena.
Oh, I think I walked by you then.
Yeah, we've kind of built it up a little bit where they've got a canopy and they've kind of made it more presentable than it was probably at that point last year. But it's neat because that's where fans mingle, whether it's Golden Knights fans or fans of the visiting teams.
Yeah.
And perhaps with the exception of Philadelphia, all the visiting fans were very much engaged with the Golden Knights fans. And, you know, the people there are just so overjoyed to have a major league sports franchise that they can call their own. That is an identity for their city. Because if you talk to anybody else, you know, around the country, you mention Las Vegas, what's the first thing you think of? The Strip, the casino, gambling, and you know, Sin City, all of that. But now there's finally something that identifies Las Vegas other than all of that.
Right.
Right? And so people can wear their Golden Knights jackets or jerseys or caps anywhere in the country, and people just know it. Like, wow, what a great season you guys had. Mm-hmm. Must be great, you know, the crowds and everything else. And I've experienced that myself. I've seen Golden Knights memorabilia in places I was shocked to see it. it's amazing. So the people are very proud of that, and therefore they're so welcoming to those visiting fans. And, you know, of course, it is a city that has so much invested in tourism,
right,
whether it's along the Strip or the other things that are around Las Vegas that a lot of people aren't aware of. But it's really a terrific place to visit, even aside from the gambling and the casinos and all that sort of thing. And, a lot of people are coming to town to see the Golden Knights, and what a spectacle it is. They do make it a Vegas show.
Yes.
So the people absolutely love it.
Yeah, it was I felt like it was dinner, a show, and then a hockey game broke out. But it was so interesting and fascinating, and the food was amazing. And I may or may not have picked up a Vegas Golden Knight hat that I wear occasionally here in Tampa Bay. But, they do a really, really good job. So, all right, Dan, we're going to take a quick break with you and come back. We want to talk about the team this season on Game Misconduct. We'll be right back.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
We're back with more Game Misconduct. Don't forget to follow us on social media at Game Miz with a Z Conduct. We are with our guest Dan Duva, who was with the Vegas Golden Knights, originally with the Syracuse Crunch before that. And our teams are about to meet. You know, we only get to see them here once a year on the regular season. And so kind of give us a brief synopsis, the cliff notes of what the Vegas Golden Knights team looks like this year.
A little bit different than last year in terms of personnel, in that no longer are James Neal, David Perron, and Lucas Spezza with the team. They've been replaced by some pretty notable guys like Max Pacioretty, Paul Stastny, and Mick Holden on defense. Other than that, the team is very similar. Of late, the Knights have lost four consecutive games. The only other time in franchise history the Knights have lost four in a row, the last four games of last season against the Washington Capitals to finish off the Cup final. The only other time they've lost four in a row, and it was two games before the break and two games after the break. And it's surprising, I think, in that they had scored seven goals against the Penguins a few games before the break. It looked like they were starting to click. Paul Stastny and Max Pacioretty had had injuries at different times of the year, so only of late have they both been healthy, and they've been kind of a point per game once they've been in the lineup together. And it's been very enjoyable to watch them, and they've been consistent, along with Alex Tuch. Alex, who's from Syracuse, New York, by the way, and has rooted for the Crunch growing up. He was a first-round pick of the Minnesota Wild and played at Boston College, and he's the team's leading scorer at 40 points. So those three guys have been standouts. I think the surprise has been the lack of success for Jonathan Marchessault, who, of course, we know from Syracuse and Tampa, William Karlsson, and Riley Smith, which last year was not only the top line, they were one of the best teams in hockey at even strength. And not only did William Karlsson jump from six goals to 43, he also led the league in plus-minus plus 49.
Wow.
Now he's, I think minus eight now. And those guys, it's just not quite clicking, and who knows why. You wish you could put your finger on it if you're Gerard Gallant and the coaching staff. So just the last little stretch here, the Knights have not been able to put up the goals, including against the Florida Panthers, who have the 29th-ranked defense in the league. Vegas only scored the one goal. So I think that they're trying to figure that out. I mentioned Riley Smith. He had been out for seven games. Right now Nick Holden is out with an injury. Eric Halla has missed about 3 months now, and he had been a 29-goal scorer last year. So that's one guy that's notably absent. But the steady Eddie in goal in Marc-Andre Fleury, the ninth all-star, I mean, he's been terrific, leads the league in shutouts and wins and minutes, and I think goals against, too. That's what happens when you play as much as he has. So it's still an impressive team. They're in a bit of a slump, but they're comfortably third place in the Pacific Division. They've got a 10-point cushion over Vancouver as of the game's ending last night. Against the Panthers a couple of days ago. So we'll see how it turns out, but they're in a rough patch right now.
I have a question about Marc-Andre Fleury, who is fantastic. I feel, and maybe I'm wrong here, but I feel like towards the end of his time in Pittsburgh, he just seemed to deflate a little bit. And now I see a lot of interviews you've done with him. I've seen him at the All-Star game. And of course, last year, the amazing season the Knights had, he seems like he found that spark of that passion again. It seems to be a lot of fun to cover, and goalies tend to be not that animated, but he really seems like he's having the time of his life again.
Oh, I usually describe Marc-Andre Fleury as a prince. He is very much the charmer. He's smiling, and I think you're onto something there. The time with Pittsburgh, of course, Matt Murray had come in and supplanted him as the number one goalie. And yes, Fleury had a big hand in that second cup for the Penguins because Murray was unavailable. But, you know, Fleury faltered just a little bit, and there was the opening to get Murray back in. And, you know, Murray was the man in net for those two Penguin Cups in 16 and 17. And, you know, when you think about Fleury having been drafted first overall way back in 2003, and he was the guy for so much of their success from that point on over the next dozen years, and did have one cup that was all his own.
Right.
But really the last two, Matt Murray was more the guy. And you could only imagine when you've been the guy in a city for that long, where you show up 18 years old and, you know the Mario Lemieux involvement, Sidney Crosby comes along a few years after Fleury, and what has been built there, and then to feel as though still more than capable of performing, you're being put out to pasture. But I've also heard that even though Fleury was not likely to return after the 2017 season, and the word was never official, but that he would likely be exposed and that the Golden Knights were going to claim him in the expansion draft, he was likely aware of that down the stretch.
Okay.
Would the Penguins decide to trade him at that point, maybe get something back because they were maybe going to lose somebody else. And basically what I've heard is if you were to have traded Marc-Andre Fleury off of that Penguins team in 2017, it would have been like setting off a grenade in the locker room.
Yeah.
That's how important he was to that group, that even if he wasn't playing every game, and Matt Murray was, that he was so much the leader of that group that it would have been decimating. And he's very close with Sidney Crosby. And the antics, there are a lot of these jokes, practical jokes they play on each other.
Mm-hmm.
That relationship is really special. And now that Fleury has been the guy for the Golden Knights, I mean, he's the face of the franchise. And even though no one wears a Captain C for the Golden Knights, there are a few letter A's, Derek Englund and Riley Smith and Nate Schmidt, among some others that have worn an A. The true captain, in my eyes, is Marc-Andre Fleury. And he is that personality, that veteran that everyone looks up to. And it doesn't matter if you're in your first year of pro hockey or your 15th, you look up to Marc-Andre Fleury, and he just commands that respect from everyone in that room and opposing teams as well.
Yeah, and I think part of that, I mean, at least for me watching from afar, was seeing how gracious he was and how professional he was, knowing that probably down the line he was going to be left to pasture to go to the expansion draft and still came to the rink, showed up, played his game, practiced as hard, and was just,
It just seems like he's having fun again.
And seeing, and I think it was kind of a vindication for him last season that it's like, okay, well, you let me go, and I was very gracious about it. However, I'm going to show you now, and boy, did they show, everybody.
Yes, yeah, and even to think back last year, remember, he gets hurt in the fourth game of the season.
He did,
The Knights have that big win in Dallas, and remember, this is just days after the horrible October 1st shooting. The Knights are on the road and, to launch the franchise, and James Neal scores a couple of big goals, but really the star of that game in Dallas was Fleury.
Mm-hmm.
The Knights win the next night against Arizona on the road. Then they come home. The incredible start on October 10th in franchise history. The Knights score four goals in the first period. And then the fourth game against Detroit is when Anthony Mantha crashes the net and hits Marc-Andre Fleury in the head with his knee. And Fleury missed 2 months. He comes back in December and has a shootout loss against Carolina. But that next game was against Pittsburgh. And you knew that he was trying to get back. He could play against Pittsburgh. He got one out of the way against Carolina, and he got that win. And and I don't know that he'll ever put it in the terms that are truly in his mind, but to come back and beat the Penguins in that particular game has to be among the more meaningful wins he's ever had.
Well, it's definitely, I really enjoy getting any opportunity to watch the Vegas Golden Knights play. I'm super impressed by Alex Tuch when I saw him in Vegas. Mm-hmm. I was like, this guy is going to be a superstar. But we kind of want to get a quick take from you on the Lightning this far this season and what it's going to take from Vegas to maybe take home that win.
It's a good question because, as I mentioned earlier, the Knights are not finding the back of the net very often. And whether it's Andre Vasilevsky or Louis Domingue, their goaltending's fantastic right now. What's Domingue up to 9 consecutive wins?
Yeah, it's
close to that. Yeah,
and so he's been great. Vasilevsky, of course, is an all star, and Eric Chernak has stepped in wonderfully on the blue line. You look at those guys they keep bringing up from Syracuse, they keep doing the job.
Yeah.
Whether it's Braden Point or Yanni Gourde up and down the lineup, and even going back a few more years to Tyler Johnson and Andre Palat, of course. And of course, you look at that home record for the Lightning, 20 wins and 5 losses at home. So it is going to be a challenge for the Knights in that they have been slumping, and here you are going up against the best team in the league. But from a Knights standpoint, you would imagine that you think back to how well the Knights have played against Tampa, in particular last year, the big win that they had at T-Mobile Arena. What a thrilling game that was. 4-3, Shea Theodore scores the game-winning goal with 2.3 seconds left. And then a couple of months later in Tampa, it's another victory for the Knights against the Lightning on the road. So you think about the success that they had last year, and maybe when you play against the NHL's best, maybe it gets the best out of you. They've got to find something to snap out of this skid. They just have not produced in the way that you would expect. They've got so many weapons. Perhaps not as many as the Lightning, but they have had so much offensive success, and they're just not finding it right now. But maybe the Lightning will bring the best out of them. The Knights are a fast team. Of course, Tampa, what a fast team Tampa is. So maybe if we see a game like we saw last December that's close and fast and energetic, maybe the Knights kind of snap back into form.
Well, it seems like our AHL affiliate is just as good as, you know, bringing up players to the big leagues as its commentators. So we're super happy that you landed in Vegas. And thank you so much for joining us today. We really appreciated having you on, and hope to see you at the rink.
It was a blast.
Oh, thanks so much. And it's my pleasure to be with you and to chat about the Lightning and talk about a lot of these people, whether it's the players, the coaches, the staff, management, you know, all the people who've been around, you know, the Lightning over the last 5 years when I was with the Crunch. You know, I still have that special connection. So it's really a delight for me to chat with you.
All right. That was Dan Duva, voice of the Vegas Golden Knights. You can follow him on Twitter at Dan_Duva, D-U-V-A. I could talk to him for another 2 hours, but we had to wrap it up.
So much fun.
That's it. We're out of time.
We are out of time.
We will catch you next week on Game Misconduct. We're going to have our guest, Dave Mishkin, next
another
week.
We can't wait.
Follow us on all social media at Game Mis with a Z Conduct, and we will catch you next week.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' on You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.